You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. With thousands of people still trapped in the submerged city of New Orleans, millions still without power, water, and adequate shelter along the Gulf Coast, President Bush toured the devastation today, 5 hours after Hurricane Katrina struck. This hour, we're going to try to tackle some of the obvious but head-scratching questions about the situation in New Orleans and how it came to be that a major American city could exist and survive below sea level. We're going to look back a few years and try to answer the question, was this a disaster just waiting to happen, as some had predicted? We'll also talk about the public health risks that authorities are struggling to address, risks like disease, water shortages, health care, and what about the future of the city and the region? Can New Orleans be rebuilt so that the city could withstand future hurricanes without the fatal flooding that overcame it this week? Also, what role did the destruction of the natural resources, the wetland areas around the city, play in helping the hurricane? And finally, we are now entering one of the most active times of the hurricane season, especially for the Gulf of Mexico. We've already had two major hurricanes this year. The government is forecasting perhaps five or more of them. Think about the millions of people now homeless in the Gulf states, living in their cars or makeshift lean-tos or out in the open. How could they seek shelter if and when another hurricane or a few more of them happen to come along? What kind of planning should be going on now to protect all these people who are left homeless and out in the open? Give us a call. Our number is 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. Let me introduce my guests. Ivor van Heerden is the director of the Center for the Study of Public Health Impacts of Hurricanes and deputy director of the Louisiana State University Hurricane Center. He is also associate professor of civil and environmental engineering at Louisiana State. He joins us by phone from campus in Baton Rouge. Thanks very much for talking with us today, Dr. van Heerden.
Thank you for this opportunity.
You're welcome. John Pardue is the Elizabeth Howe Stewart Professor of Civil and Environmental Engineering at Louisiana State. He's also the director of the Louisiana Water Resource Research Institute, and he joins us from the campus of LSU. Thank you for talking with us today, Dr. Pardue.
Thank you, Ira.
Craig Colton is professor of geography at Louisiana State University. He's the author of a new book, An Unnatural Metropolis, Wrestling New Orleans from Nature. He joins us by phone from Baton Rouge. Welcome to the program, Dr. Colton.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Let me just play on the title of your book, Wrestling New Orleans from Nature. Did nature wrestle back New Orleans this week?
Well, one little distinction there is wrestling New Orleans from nature. Down here we wrestle gators, but not the...
I'm sorry, it's resting. Well, did New Orleans rest it back? Did nature rest it back this week?
It took a big step in that direction, certainly. These kind of storms, New Orleans has suffered inundation before, river floods, hurricane floods, rainfall filling the bowl of the levees in the past. It's endured flooding on numerous occasions in the past, and each time the pumps have been able to... Or even before there were pumps, the city has dried out and did move on.
Tell us how New Orleans got to be New Orleans, where it is. Why would you put a city in a place where it's so vulnerable underwater, under sea level there?
Well, most of the city, and particularly the place where people live, are not below sea level.
Mm-hmm.
The initial settlement clustered along a narrow ridge of land called the Natural Levee that even today is about 15 feet above sea level. The land generally graded back from there at a very imperceptible tilt towards the lake, which is essentially at sea level. And there's some other little high points and ridges within the city. But most of the city was not below sea level, and certainly where people lived was above sea level, and they chose to live there. They chose that site because, one, it was a great point for defending the great French interior from English the English who the French feared would want to take over their claim. And it was also a great place for serving as a port to export the goods from the interior of what was then France and what is now the United States.
Mm-hmm. When did they decide they had to keep the ocean or the lake or the river out?
The first stage of levee building began in the 1720s. Actually, the first law for levee building was passed in 1728, which required every landowner to build a levee along their respective property lines that face the river. A more or less effective levee system along the river was in place by the 1860s, by the time of the Civil War. Only really in the 20th century did they begin building levees on the lakefront side. Mm-hmm. They had protected the city for the most part from river flooding, and they began getting a series of floods from the lake. They built levees there, and those have been increased in height over time, as have the riverfront levees. And now the entire city is ringed by a series of levee systems, and to augment those, they have to have pumps to pump the water out. Mm-hmm. Once the water's pumped out, much of the city has now subsided below sea level. Much of it was a wetland at one time. As the water was pumped out, they sink below. So the area below sea level has actually increased over time, and it is a fairly large time, and it is a fairly large section of the city.
Mm-hmm. I want to, while I have an opportunity to talk to him, I want to bring in NPR correspondent Philip Davis, who is in Baton Rouge. Welcome to Science Friday. Philip, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Are spirits any higher today now that the president has been visiting, coming to Baton Rouge, but to New Orleans and to the other Gulf areas?
Well, it looks like finally a pretty massive National Guard presence is finally making itself known on the streets in New Orleans. Just a little while ago, a huge convoy arrived in the city heading directly for the convention center, and following behind them was another big convoy of buses that peeled off and went to the Superdome. And so, as one general put it, the cavalry seemingly has arrived. Combine that with the remarks that President Bush made today, I think you're going to see spirits rising a little bit, though, of course, it's still very early days.
Mm-hmm. And has the evacuation looked like it's begun in earnest, and the law being restored to New Orleans now?
Law being restored, that is one question. I think it's a little early to start talking about that, but the evacuation looks like it has begun in earnest. As you know already, more than 11,000 people have been sent to Houston, and more are going to San Antonio and other cities. With these buses coming down, the evacuation has really started. As one state representative in Baton Rouge that I was talking today said, looks like the federal government has finally gotten it. And she sent out an appeal. You know, anyone who has a bus who wants to bring it down to New Orleans, you will now be able to get through, you'll be able to pick up refugees, and you'll be able to take them to refugee centers around the country. So this whole thing about blocking off New Orleans and not letting buses through, not letting help through, I think you're going to start seeing changes in that.
All right. Thank you very much for that update, NPR correspondent Philip Davis. Good luck to you.
Thanks a lot. Talk to you later.
You're welcome. We're talking this hour on Science Friday about what to expect in many different aspects of the Gulf region. We're talking with Ivor Van Heerden, John Pardue, and Craig Colton. 1-800-989-8255 is our number. Ivor, can a levee system, we were talking about the levees, the early levees, is there a model for a levee system that can be built that could withstand a giant hurricane of four or five?
Yes, I think you could. You know, one of the difficulties in building levees in New Orleans, and Craig kind of pointed to this, is these are marshy soils. Mm-hmm. So you can't literally build a mountain of soil and hope for that to stay there. It's going to slowly subside. But the technology exists whether you use reinforced concrete or sheet piling and soil to build effective levees.
What are they doing in Amsterdam? How do they? I mean, they work seem to be surviving very well in their levee and dike system.
Well, if you remember, I mean, they did have a very serious flood in 1953, and lots of people. I think it was 53 or 57, and lots of people drowned. And they then rethought their whole levee system, and totally revamped them. And one important thing they've done is looked at tidal floodgates at the mouths of rivers as a way of cutting down surge.
Yeah, I noticed when I was there that they would open the gates up once or twice a day, something like that.
Yeah, we've advocated for some time now that perhaps we should build similar sorts of gates in parts of Louisiana, and if not, let's look at some of the critical cross sections that the storm surge moves through, and build in essence segmented breakwaters that would allow the normal daily tidal interchange, so we didn't interfere with the with the natural system and allowed marine organisms to move back and forth with the tides. But by reducing the cross-sectional area, we could reduce the amount of water getting in New Orleans and hopefully reduce the amount of surge.
Because we've heard questions about whether they should just start all over again in New Orleans. The president was asked today about rebuilding in New Orleans in the same spot. I guess if you build it the right way, they will come. They'll live there, and it'll be possible to safely go back.
Yes, I mean, I think there's a lot going for New Orleans. What I would argue for, though, is as you rebuild New Orleans, is to restore our coast. Because if we had those 1 million acres that we've lost since the 1930s, then the surge would have been a lot less. So that we've lost that outer protection, those wetlands and barrier islands that knock the surge down, and as a consequence, we get these Katrina-type floods.
Mm-hmm. John Pardue, would you agree with that?
I would agree. I think quantitatively our storm surge models really predicted what was going to happen, and I think that we have the models and the quantitative tools now to be able to show people that, hey, if we just had this structure here, if we just spent this amount of money, the storm surge would have been decreased by this amount. And I think it's time now to rethink where our priorities were and really start thinking more about what we can do coastal protection and trying to build some structures there to prevent this from happening in the future.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take a break, come back, and talk lots more with Ivar van Heerden, who's the director of the Center for the Study of Public Health Impacts of Hurricanes and deputy director at LSU's Hurricane Center. Also, John Pardue. He's also a director of Louisiana Water Resources Research Institute at LSU. Craig Colton, professor of geography there and author of the new book, An Unnatural Metropolis, Resting New Orleans from Nature. I don't know why I keep pulling the L in there. Maybe there's something Freudian going on. We'll be right back after this break and take your questions. We can cover the whole landscape, so to speak, of what's going on in New Orleans and the other Gulf Coast states. Stay with us. We'll be right back.